Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's December the 14th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. And later this half hour, James Barnett of MF Global will join us to carry on that conversation. In agricultural news, the Senate has passed a stripped-down energy bill. The House looks to be putting energy on the fast track, and an attempt to lower the farm subsidy cap has failed. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then, just before the bottom of the hour, I'll take you to a beef cow farm operation in western Illinois that feeds standing corn and supplements corn gluten feed. It all happens on this Friday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing and Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Taking a look at the numbers in Chicago as they finished on this Friday afternoon. Futures in the wheat pit like this. December contract and nickel higher at $9.39. The March futures at $9.79.5, 26 cents higher. And July contract down 19.5. They finished at $7 even for the day. At $7.88 even for the day. December corn futures at $4.20, settlement price up 1.25. The March contract up 3.25 at $4.38.25. And the May futures at $4.49.25 in the wheat pit, or in the corn pit, up 3.25 for the day. And December contract at $4.50.5, down a quarter. January soybean futures $11.57, 11 cents higher. The March contract at $11.75, up 9. And the May futures at $11.88.75, up 9.25. November soybeans for next year, $10.51.25, down 3.25 on the afternoon. December bean meal futures at $3.24.5, up $3.30 for the day. And January futures at $3.25.90, up $4.30. December bean oil at $45.85, down 15. January futures down 4 at $46.22. Mercantile exchange numbers from the CME Group, December live cattle, 92.60, 62.5 cents higher. February futures up 30 at 95.47.5. January feeder cattle at 103.80 unchanged. The March futures at 106.17.5. They're finished 42.5 higher for the afternoon. The outside markets trading the crude oil now in the January contract at $91.30 a barrel, down 95 cents. The CRB at 348.99 is down 0.56. The dollar at 77.429 is down, or rather up 8.98, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,401 is 116 points lower for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hey, Todd. Happy Friday to you, buddy.
Hey, good Friday to you, too. You know, I've been on the road all week, so I really haven't seen the numbers. I've been out with the Farm Doc team for a good portion of the week, and then yesterday at a conference on information technology for agriculture all day in Bloomington. So maybe you should recap what happened for the week for me, and then we'll take off with the rest of the day trade.
Well, the shortened version is we got a report that did bring down corn, bean, and wheat ending stocks domestically. We got just under 1.8 billion bushels of stocks in corn, 185 in beans, and around 280 in the wheat. Most of those numbers were factored into the price, we suspect, Todd. Maybe the corn was a little bit tighter than the trade was expecting, and the world numbers for corn were the same, probably a little tighter than the trade was expecting. But it was a neutral report. Fed report came out then later. They only cut the rates by a quarter point, and crude oil and the Dow Jones started to go down pretty substantially on Tuesday afternoon. Wednesday came around. The Federal Reserve came out with a new plan of action with other central banks where they were going to provide direct liquidity to the major investment banks around the world. I suspect that's due to the potential that some of these banks had so much credit defaults on their books that they may have been insolvent at that point, and they were unable to get additional lines of credit to meet their positions in the market, probably by going to the traditional ways of the financial market. So the Fed stepped in and said, we're going to become a bank for you directly, and we're going to auction money and print dollar bills, and we're going to be an actual line of credit for you both here in December and in January, and if you need it after that, pretty much. let's take care of this problem and not let it get any worse. So that turned the crude oil up sharply on Wednesday, I think $4 to $5 a barrel. That really got the grains going. But by the end of the day, the stock market was only up a little bit on Wednesday. The crude oil stayed strong, but the following day, the crude oil gave back about half the gains from Wednesday. So that brought us to this morning, where the trade saw, after the Federal Reserve announcement Wednesday, a sharply appreciating dollar, a sharply depreciating gold market, crude that was on the weaker side, the Dow that was on the weaker side, and treasuries that were on the weaker side, meaning higher yields, higher interest rates in the real market. The Fed pushing that liquidity into the market pushes the idea of inflation. China's inflation came out, I believe it was on Thursday, 18% food price inflation right now in China. United States CPI came out this morning showing around, I believe, 4, 4.5% food price inflation. So the grain trade says the dollar is higher. That's a concern, but right now the demand is so good, let's go ahead and keep buying. And that pretty much wraps up. You know, the beans were clearly the leader for most of the week, and then wheat kind of took over later here in the afternoon, especially the bull spreading.
Yeah, let me talk a little bit about that, because I'm wondering whether the appreciated dollar has much to do with this. If you look at what happened for the week in the wheat in December and July, the spread widened by, 26.5 cents. With a nearby contract up 36.5, and the July futures were down 20 on the week. That's a pretty good move.
It is, and you know, like the March-July wheat spread went from $1.05 roughly to $1.91 today. Just in 3 days it did that, and I talked to Chicago about that both yesterday. They visited us yesterday and called them this afternoon and talked to another person in Chicago and asked them about it, and they said, you know, for our perspective and what we're seeing is no one really wants to be short the front end. The volume's not huge on these rallies. It's steady, wouldn't call it light, probably just right at steady, but no one really wants to sell the front end, and the bull spreads have started to become kind of the new thing to be in fashion here. I think that is due to the dollar, Todd. I think the trade is a little bit nervous about what the sheer flat price level we're at right now, and so they don't want to necessarily just outright buy it. They realize the option volatility is pretty high, so they don't really want to buy options here. They really don't want to sell options because that can rip your head off in one day. So why not go back to the futures bull spread, because you've got strong front-end demand and your new crop supplies are trying to come on and meet this strong demand and meet the high prices. That seems to be the flavor of the day. I think they'd probably be outright buying it, though, if the dollar was still weaker. So this dollar thing may have a few more days, maybe even a few more weeks to play out. In our mind and in our analysis, we wonder if these funds that we're talking about leaving energies and metals and moving over in the agricultural complex will continue to think that and feel that way, because the Fed really did throw into the works a big monkey wrench. No one was expecting the type of coordinated intervention by all the central banks of the world, not seen since September 11, 2001. And it kind of gives you an idea maybe of how bad the financial markets were going to get.
Yeah, let's move to the corn market very quickly. A 15.5 cent gain to 450.5 for the December, the new crop. Is that all part and parcel of the 100 million bushel drop that USDA released on Tuesday?
I think partly, and you know, it goes back to the bull spreading there in corn as well. The July D spread went to an inverted market this week. You know, the July is now premium to the December very quickly. We keep seeing nice sales, like South Korea came in for under 160,000 tons of corn today. Those types of export sales we saw yesterday keeps the market in focus that probably the farmer's done selling now for the next 30 to 60 days, but we also realize the new crop acres are not as big, and don't need to be as big as they were last year. You know, Informa numbers came out today at 87.4 million. If you use a yield of 155 and a total demand the same of this year of about 12.6 billion bushels, puts you still at about a 1.7 carryover. So the fundamentals of the bull spread make sense right now in corn. Next stop for March, since we closed above the 435 level, would be the June 18th resistance of about 443.
What are you telling farmers that are calling in at this point? And are they calling in, and what kind of questions are they really asking you?
Yeah, producers are starting to call in a lot more, and I think they're appreciative of the idea that we've been doing puts and not selling a lot of cash, because most producers have been seeing their basis appreciate. It widened out when the selling was great in the first part of December, but the selling's really dried up. I think what we're telling them is what we've been telling them for a long time. The Dow Jones, the S&P, in the crude oil markets should move with the commodities. And if you see, you've seen the weakness in the Dow and the S&P, it's come back, the crude oil's come back, and so it gives you a chance to get, you know, newer highs in this market in the commodities, but you still keep a floor price underneath you. So our motto is, until we break support levels in the corn and in the beans, we hold off on any additional cash sales. And if clients call in and say, I'm not at your subscribed levels of sales, we're buying puts for them instead of asking them to sell more cash at this time.
All right. We appreciate you being with us for the
day. Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. Mike Zuzulo is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Friday afternoon. At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest with the folks at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Ed Kieser's forecast this afternoon says in northern Indiana, skies will be cloudy. There'll be a few scattered snow showers there, some flurries. Elsewhere, mostly sunny highs today from 20 in far northwestern Illinois to 44 in the far south. Tonight in north and central Illinois, becoming cloudy. Some snow arriving after midnight in the southern part of Illinois, becoming cloudy. A mix of snow and sleet arriving after midnight. With some rain in the southern tip. In Indiana, increasing cloudiness, some snow arriving in western sections toward daybreak. Lows will range from 10 in far northwestern Illinois to 32 in the far south. A winter storm watch is in effect for much of southwestern Illinois from midnight through tomorrow evening. A winter storm is in effect from Saturday morning through Sunday morning for most of Indiana, with the exception of the far north central and far western sections. Dave's here now with the news.
In agricultural news, the Senate yesterday passed a stripped-down version of the energy bill by an 86-8 vote. The bill passed after Democrats removed a tax provision that would have ended some benefits for the oil and gas industries. On the other side of Capitol Hill, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi pledged to put energy legislation on the fast track for a vote as early as next week. Senators yesterday also focused on farm bill amendments, voting down provisions that would have restricted commodity payments to producers at the higher end of the income bracket. Iowa's Chuck Grassley and North Dakota's Byron Dorgan lost their attempt to lower the cap on commodity payments to $250,000 for couples. The Senate bill keeps the current $40,000 cap for direct payments and $60,000 for countercyclical payments. Caps on marketing loan gains would be unlimited. Meanwhile, House Agriculture Chairman Colin Peterson says he may consider changing the definition of what constitutes a farm. Peterson says he'll bring his ideas when the farm bill reaches Senate House Conference Committee. USDA currently defines a farm as any place from which $1,000 or more of agricultural products are produced and sold during a calendar year. Peterson believes by changing the definition, he can eliminate part-time and hobby farmers, freeing up money for large commercial operations or other farm programs. And the World Trade Organization is expected next week to accept a challenge from Brazil and Canada, which claim U.S. farm subsidies exceeded WTO limits of $19.1 billion for a number of years. The new challenge will hinge on how the WTO interprets the rules on crop supports for wheat, corn, rice, and other crops. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website, the address, willag.org. That's willag.org. Special guest this afternoon during the Closing Market Report, James Barnett of MF Global Research out of Chicago, Illinois, joins us by phone today to take up the commodity markets and what he sees in the futures. Good afternoon to you, James. Thanks for being on the line with us today. We appreciate it.
Oh, good afternoon, Todd. Pleasure to be here.
Can you first tell me, because not all of our audience is familiar with you, you've been on the show Commodity Week a couple of times, but why don't you go through what you do for MF Global?
Okay. I'm in the research department. I work with Rich Feltes, and together between the two of us, we put together most of the analysis on the in the grain and the oil seeds. I do a daily report on the grain and oil seeds market. For a few years, I was down the trading floor and had minute-to-minute contact with what was going on there. I've come up to the office since then, but bottom line is I do the analysis. I've also make presentations on long-term market outlooks. I've been to Brazil this year, and I'm going to Vancouver in about 30 days. So, again, just generally the research grant analyst with the firm along with Rich.
Tell me what you see in the long-term for corn, soybeans, and wheat. There's been a lot of discussion about whether a new plateau has been reached, what that plateau might be on an average cash grain price across the Midwest. I think I've heard something along the range of $3.40 for a new plateau potentially. Seeing something like that in your research?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of issues here. There's the futures plateau and the cash plateau. Obviously, there's been a greater disconnect between the cash basis and the futures market, and I think that clouds the issue a bit in terms of what the cash market's going to be at. But let's just say yes. When you look at the corn market, just take as a generalization here, look at the big picture. You look at the times where the corn market has been able to go and rally up to new levels. Usually there's a crisis that precipitates it. For instance, World War I was a crisis. World War II, another one, where there were grain shortages and a new rally up to higher levels. And then you chop around usually for a few years and find that the bottom support is not too far from what the resistance used to be, and that becomes a new plateau. The third one, the most recent one we had until now, after World War II, then you go to the 1970s and you had, you know, obviously the Russian grain deals and then OPEC oil embargo and all that knocked it up to a new higher level for corn. And we basically traded in there for 30 or so years. And now it looks at the very least that the bottom floor of the corn market should be higher, certainly, than it's been over the past 30, and we are in that plateau. You asked the question of what these levels are, and that's, of course, if that's the magic question. Bottom line for corn is looking at the futures now as opposed to the cash. Certainly anything down in the 350 area would have to be considered long-term, pretty close to bedrock support. So I know we got a little below that this last fall. So that's a ballpark area. But I don't think we're going to get much lower than last fall's prices or this recent fall's prices, and then you talk about the upside. I think that between there and the $5-ish area is probably their parameters for the next 3 years.
So a 250 trading range for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
Would you consider that a stair step then, or could we go to the upside, or could we drop back down, do you think, after that?
I think we're here for a while. I think we're here for good. The only thing that would change that in the big picture is if something were to happen with ethanol. And in the long run, you know, cellulosic ethanol is what the government is looking to subsidize. Whether that's actually practical or not is a whole other issue. But as long as we have the basically global demand being what it is, feed grain growth globally being what it is, competition for acres expected over the next several years, and combine that with domestic ethanol consumption, and you have a picture here where the downside is definitely going to be limited and will be much higher than we would have thought of a couple of years ago.
The historical tale would say something will happen with ethanol.
Explain what you mean by that.
Well, if you go back and take a look at the history of ethanol, it's been tried several times, and we don't talk about this a lot on the air, but it was tried in the 1850s, the primary fuel for the nation, and because of that, in the 1860s, they used it to pay for the Civil War after that, put a big tax on it, killed it. They tried it in World War I after World War II. Didn't make it. I think we tried it again. We put some taxes on, or put some tax breaks in the 70s. In the 80s, we put $1 billion out of the U.S. government into it, precipitated 155 10 million gallon ethanol production facilities, and a year later, half of those were gone, or 55% or something like that, because OPEC turned a spigot. So there are lots of things that could precipitate a problem with ethanol. And it doesn't have a good history, but sure, it looks like it's made it this time around, I suppose.
Right. You bring up some history that I didn't have, especially back in some of the Civil War information, so that's interesting. What I will say on this is what we've seen this past week, and you can argue as to our strength. Certainly a lot of the strength has been built to the market over these other long-term issues, but I think what happened with this week with the renewable fuel mandate, first looked like it was going to get shifted to the farm bill, and then it ended up coming through the energy bill. Energy bill gets through the Senate. Looks like it's going to pass with flying colors now. And in that energy bill is a 35 billion gallon ethanol mandate by 2022. That doesn't mean anything too specific, I don't think, for the next few months for ethanol profitability. But what it does mean is that over the long run, people are going to be a little more willing to invest in ethanol facilities. These negative margins or borderline margins that we've had for the last few months in the ethanol facilities, along with the blend wall that we've seen, as it gets more difficult to get ethanol in the last 50% of the gasoline supply, mostly in the Sun Belt and out in the East Coast. These issues were big issues, and ethanol production was probably going to lag USDA's estimate this year. But I'm not – that it still could happen, but what I'm saying is that that had raised some red flags for investors into the ethanol industry. I think that will be alleviated a bit by this farm bill. And I think what else it says is if you just listen to the content and the converse and the undertone of some of the hyperbole going on in D.C., you really see that a lot of senators, a lot of congressmen are really focused on having this work. This just ranges from Domenici, a Republican out of Mexico, to Harkin, to Harry Reid. They've all made comments this week that basically says they find the ethanol subsidy and the ongoing expansion of the renewable fuel mandate is a very important thing. And that tells you that the government isn't going to let up the subsidy anytime soon, and they're going to look to protect the industry.
Yeah, the difference, I suppose, this time around, and I bring up the historical context just because it is historical context, but it sure looks like the difference this time around is the political will is there, and it's widespread. And if the RFSs come through, they generally, and I don't recall what the 35 billion gallon had, but usually they include 15 billion gallons allocated towards ethanol and biofuels based on crop production. So right. it should be a fairly bright picture, I would think, for ethanol over the future.
Yeah, and then the big question, of course, is these cellulosic issues. It is not a lead pipe sense that even with all the research money that's going to be thrown at this, that they're going to have a technological solution to make cellulosic viable commercially. So that's the other big question, and the questions are if and when. At some point, that could even spell the end of the great era of corn and other starch and sugar-based commodities as a use for ethanol, or as the base material for ethanol in the U.S. That's a long ways away. But, again, that's the sort of issues that we'll be playing out over the next 5 or 10 years.
James, I appreciate you taking the time this afternoon.
Okay, I appreciate it, Todd.
Yep, James Barnett is with MF Global out of Chicago, Illinois, joining us from his office. I believe they're on the 20th floor of the CBOT Annex, looking down on the Chicago Board of Trade. We thank him for joining us this afternoon. I promised you a feature story on feed and a beef cattle farm out of Western Illinois. We'll not get to that today because it was just too interesting talking to James. I'll bring it to you sometime next week. In a couple of minutes, we'll talk with Steve Hilberg, the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. It is now time to take a look at your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Federal prosecutors say a former Illinois Corrections Department director who was charged with accepting $50,000 in kickbacks from lobbyists has reached a plea agreement. Donald Snyder served as corrections director from 1999 to early 2003 after he was appointed to the post by former Governor George Ryan. Federal prosecutors say the lobbyists represented vendors who had contracts with the Corrections Department. Two lobbyists accused of paying the kickbacks have also been indicted. Snyder's plea agreement was filed in federal court on Friday in Chicago. A sentencing date hasn't been set. The Carle Foundation has sued state and local tax authorities in an effort to earn back its tax-exempt status for its hospital in Urbana. The lawsuit is over the State Department of Revenue's decision in February to deny property tax exemptions for the years 2004 and 2005. The foundation is seeking reinstatement of exemptions and a tax refund with interest. Carl CEO James Leonard says the suit calls upon the principle that a tax exemption can't be revoked without a reason, noting that no change in the ownership or use of land on its medical campus took place. Prior to the ruling by the state, the foundation already owed nearly $5 million in taxes. The lawsuit was filed yesterday in Cook County. A State Department of Revenue spokesman had no comment on the suit. Police are trying to find out why a 32-year-old man was hit and killed by a large truck in southern Champaign. Police say Carlos Fuller died at the scene of the incident at South Neal Street and Windsor Road early this morning. They hope an autopsy this afternoon provides more clues. The truck driver was not ticketed. Authorities have exhumed the body of a University of Wisconsin student from a cemetery in Steger, Illinois, in hopes of finally solving her more than two-decade-old murder. Terry Dalloway was 24 when she disappeared from her home near Bar Mills, Wisconsin, on Valentine's Day of 1985. Her headless body was found 6 days later. The Indiana Supreme Court is declining to step into the legal dispute over the Terre Haute mayor's race. Republican Mayor-elect Duke Bennett's attorney had asked the court to dismiss an election recount and a challenge to the legitimacy of Bennett's candidacy. A judge in Vigo County hears the case on Monday. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL Urbana. It is a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Why don't you take a look back at what was supposed to be a pretty wicked weekend was for a good portion of the Midwest and parts of Illinois.
Yeah, it was actually, it was interesting you mentioned that because I've been working on looking at a map of where all the freezing rain was here in the Midwest over the last week. And pretty much north northwest of the Illinois River up through, if you draw that line from the Illinois River back through Missouri and look on northwestward, that was the worst of it, was some of the heaviest ice in parts of southwestern and central Missouri. There were some parts of west central Illinois, particularly Jacksonville is one community we've heard a lot about that had a lot of ice, and also parts of northern Missouri into southern Iowa. A lot of ice accumulated. Not a whole lot of snow in the central Midwest. There was some snow up in northern Iowa across southern Wisconsin about midweek. But the worst of the ice was in west central Illinois back through Missouri. In the central and east central parts of the state, we did get ice. Fortunately, temperatures really just hovered near or just slightly below freezing on Sunday when some of the heaviest rain came through, and that prevented really another 1990 from happening here. Had the temperature been another degree or two lower, it could have been a real mess throughout much of central Illinois, including east central Illinois. So we sort of dodged the bullet on that one.
Take a look at the weekend for me.
Another bullet's coming, so get ready to duck. We've got a potential snowstorm in the works for the weekend. Actually, things are starting to develop now, and snowfall amounts are going to be tricky to forecast at this point, but it does look like the heavier amounts will be just south along between I-70 and just along and a little bit north of I-70. And again, it's sort of relative. If we get a lot of snow down there, we'll get somewhat less up here. But it does look like there's going to be a lot of travel problems, and it looks like a long-duration storm. It looks like it could be snowing off and on through midday Sunday. There'll be some wind, so it looks like a lot of potential travel problems this weekend.
Any place else around the Midwest looking for problems, too?
Not for problems. I mean, this storm will go through Indiana and Ohio, so most of the Midwest east of the Mississippi River is going to have to deal with the storm. The northern Midwest has been very dry and continues to be so. So they could actually use some moisture, but it's all down here.
Okay, anything else to add before I let you go?
No, well, looks like winter will continue for another week at least.
All right, we appreciate you being with us.
All right, Todd.
That's Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey. It's located right here in Champaign County. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning at 11:30 a.m. for Commodity Week. Our guest should either be Gordy Lynn or Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group, along with Bill Biederman of Allendale. Those two folks will be joining me by phone a little bit later this afternoon, and I'll get that posted to the website this evening. So if you'd like to hear the program, Commodity Week, on the website, you can do that by 6 o'clock this afternoon at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. You have a great weekend, and be safe out there. I'm Todd Gleason. I'm going to interrupt just for a second because I just got a news alert that came in from the National Association of Farm Broadcasters for Farmers. The Senate this afternoon has approved its version, and this just came out of Washington, D.C., of the Farm Bill. So the Senate has approved its version of the Farm Bill, and the Secretary of Agriculture will hold in just about an hour a press conference on that. So we'll take care of getting hold of that and maybe try to include something in Commodity Week.